हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, page 20. Okay, so then we have a doubt from the Shankyites. There is no clear statement in that Upanishad that ether was created. How can you talk like that? Right? Because they were taking the principle that it hasn't been said it's created. Right? But at the same time is the whole line of elements, you know, from earth, from all the way down to earth, and then before that the false ego and everything. These were all said to be created, right? So in one place it has one mood, but in another place then it gives very clear, exact, all the elements, right? Sutrakar answers in the next sutra. Yavad vikram tu vibhago lokavat. Yavat, to what extent? Vikaram, creation, to, indeed. Vibhagaha, creator. Loka, the world, vat, like. Since all transformations come from Brahman, any object not specifically mentioned must also come from Brahman, just as in ordinary life. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar explains that creation of ether from Brahman is understood implicitly in this context. The Lord has incredible powers. Hence, he can create ether. If the Shastras say that ether is eternal, then it is simply figurative because the Shastras also speak of the creation and destruction of ether. Hence, Brahman is the underlying cause of all transformations. Right? You have to see things in the main context. So if we have the point that Krishna is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer, that means then these things are happening. Then you have all these different elements that are manifest, and then you have them all disappear. So then it still has that same position. Not that everything manifests, but then ether didn't. Right? You know, that doesn't make sense. Srila Bhakti, footnote 9. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains Brahman via his Shaktis to be the cause of all transformations. So when we're saying here, what we always have to remember is the Shaktis of Brahman, that's what's transforming. Brahman doesn't transform. Right? Transformation of Brahman, that's also a Mayavad philosophy. It's the earliest one. Like that. And then when that wasn't working out, they got defeated by everybody, then they came up with newer and newer forms, right? Instead of surrendering, they just keep coming up with something new. Yes?
Well, sometimes devotees also caught in the same kind of doubt, is that unless it's mentioned, and it's mentioned, you know, specifically, down to the detail, or even specific word, then we either speculate or we can't accept it. So how can we reconcile this?
Means there has to be, the first point that Lord Chaitanya makes and the scriptures everybody makes is that you have to accept the scripture, the Veda, as authority. Because if we're dealing with, I mean, it's just a logical point, since we are in the conditioned state, we're dealing with material mind, you know, intelligence and senses. And so that's the only instruments we have. So to be able to measure and calculate what's spiritual, what's beyond that, is impossible. Right? Yeah. It's not actually a possible thing. It means just logically it's not possible. You know, just like with a thermometer, we can't tell what color, you know, the banana is. You know, it's not going to happen. So because it's something different, then we have to have a basis that we can understand the absolute truth. So that is then Shastra, that's the Veda. So all the great personalities, all those who are liberated and everybody who is on that side and who actually does understand and experience, they all accept and say you have what the Shastra says is what you follow. So that faith is the first thing to have. Now, if we don't understand it, we have the faith in the Shastra, we don't understand a specific point, that's all right. But we have faith in Shastra, so it's just a matter of time. By contemplation, by practice of Krishna consciousness, the purification of the consciousness, then Krishna will reveal. Because the main point is everything on the other side of the material manifestation is only revealed by Krishna. Right? Means the material world, he reveals how much you deserve due to your karma, right? Your activities. So even that, it's still Krishna's revealing. But to understand the spiritual, then you have to perform spiritual activities. You do the appropriate material activity, you know, that goes with that material, you know, topic or subject, object like this. Then you'll get the benefit of that in that field. Right? Just like if you work in economics, you work according to the nature of economics. And you dedicate, you know, you show that bhakti to economics. Then Krishna's economics will reciprocate. He won't reciprocate as something else. You know? Yeah. Does that make sense? So let's say someone goes into, you know, the field of art. And so then they also have that devotion and apply themselves very nicely to the art form. And then Krishna will reciprocate and reveal through that. Right? Otherwise, why is it you have this painting and some people look at it and they're all, wow, this is amazing. Other people go, what's that? You know, and then walk on. Because what they can see has to be revealed by Krishna. But it will be according to your karma. So spiritual means then you have to perform spiritual activities. Right? So when you dedicate yourself in the spiritual, then you'll get revelation in the spiritual. The whole thing's being revealed by Krishna. The main problem is we think that the intelligence that we're and mind that we're endowed with, that actually can understand things on its own. That's the problem. We think that we're independent, we can do this ourselves. I'm intelligent, I have a PhD, you know, I'm, you know, well respected, I've written so many papers and journals, I go to conferences and give, you know, how you say, key point, you know, lectures and that. So why can't I understand it? Because it's not within the context of material. So you can't use a material thing to understand it. Does that make sense? So it has to be accepted, just logically, that without Shastra, you will not know spiritual. Because otherwise, we call going out in the forest and sitting down and just forgetting all about the, you know, the hustle and bustle of city life and all our personal anxieties, and just for a moment noticing the beauty and the peace and all that. And then we'll call that experience spiritual. Right? Throw in a little, you know, frankincense, you know, a little A-wave music, and then now we've got a serious spiritual, you know, experience. Huh?
Yoga.
Yeah, throw in some yoga, you know, so you know what I'm saying? And there are ones, if you pay really big bucks, you can go to a yoga retreat exactly that. Like that. So that's the whole, we don't know what's spiritual. We just take it that anything beyond the regular, you know, just desire, lust, and all that is spiritual. In one sense, it, that concept is correct, but we don't take it far enough. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to accept Shastra. Then by performing devotional service, by trying to, you know, do that service to please Krishna, then Krishna will reveal himself. And so with time, one will know. But if it's this thing, I have to know now, then it's kind of like it's a demand. So that brings us into a jigyasu, which means we're a neophyte devotee. Right? And of the four kinds of neophyte devotee, we're in the lower class that is susceptible to go away if the desires are fulfilled or not. Like if I come to Krishna for, you know, some, you know, reduction in anxiety or increase in facility or, you know, getting particular knowledge and I get it, I may have faith or I might be satisfied and go away. Or I don't get it and then I'll say, what's the use of this, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and go away. So only the jigyasu then wants to know God because he has that gratefulness that Krishna's taking care of everything, so I should do something. So he's following the rules and regulations. It's not spontaneous. But he's dutiful. So functioning in that mode of goodness, then he's working. But otherwise the others are in passion and ignorance. It's always taken that in the intellectual must be goodness, but it's not. The intelligence is actually controlled by passion. Right? It came from passion. The mind comes from goodness. You know, so when the intelligence is used to control the mind, for then, you know, according to what the scriptures say, that will situate us in goodness. But just that they have that drive to understand, you know, that one formula that holds the whole universe together, that's a mode of passion. Does that make sense? So that's all. And they're working with basically the same principles of just the senses. So they're just a sophisticated animal. Animals use the senses, but they're just a little bit smarter in some ways. In some ways, the monkey can get the bananas, you know. The professor is still trying to figure out how to keep his seat, you know. So it's not necessarily the... But we'll consider them more, how you'd say, civilized. You know? Anamoy, it's sense gratification. But they're more civilized like that. And so then they are trying to, you know, see something beyond. So that's better than just the animalistic. But it's still not actually that good. You know what I'm saying? So one has to give up that attachment to that the scientific method itself is actually that scientific. You know what I'm saying? Because we're not really talking about a scientific method. It's known as an atheistic method. Because if you bring up to the, you know, real serious scientists about God, or about, what is it, intelligent design, they don't appreciate it. But if they're actual scientists, then according to the theories that they have, they stand only because no one's disproved them. So you can't disprove that there's God, so God should stand as an aspect. And he can either be there or not, so there's a 50-50 chance. But they're saying it's 100-0. That's not scientific. That's very, very subjective. Because they want to make the decision, not that it's already, someone is already intelligent and has designed, and all you're doing is looking at something already there. We want to be able to go and, you know, find in the garage, you know, under a dusty tarpaulin, you know, a Ferrari or something. And then we analyze it and all this, and now we are the inventor and the doer, and now instead of called being a Ferrari, it's called a George or whatever it is. You know? And we get all the credit. Well, if you say is there's intelligent design, means that's all you're doing. You're just unearthing something that's already been there. That new species that you found has been there for millions of years. Just you happen to bump into it today. Right? So then it's not a George, it's whatever the Shastra says. You know?
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty, is that they want to be the controller, they want to be the enjoyer, though they're doing it on an intellectual platform. Or if we're dropping down because it doesn't match what is the way that they want to engage their senses, their false identity of how they see themselves. I'm a good person, or I'm a leader, or I'm a manager, or I always do the right thing, I'm intelligent. Does that make sense? All these kind of concepts, then if there's something that the Shastra says that doesn't actually show that we're the most intelligent, wonderful, fabulous person in the world, then we can't catch it. You know, just like when you say something a little different, and the person goes, what? Because they can't hear. In other words, something other than what is in their mind, they can't actually hear it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's just a common thing, because when you have identity, you have a position, you can function, you can deal. As soon as then that identity seemingly is jeopardized, the false identity, we don't know how to place ourselves or interact, so all the relationships, everything will just fall apart. So we have to maintain an identity. But that's why then it's mentioned that I'm the servant of Krishna. That's an eternal identity that you can always maintain. Even if you don't know your specific position in the spiritual world, it's still an identity that can be eternally maintained. But anything on the material platform, it's always changing. You know, you're the tough guy. Yeah, come back when you're 70. You know, does that make sense? You know, you have to remember Dirty Harry when he's 70. It's a movie. Like that. You know what I'm saying? It gets, yeah. So, it's just, the whole point is whatever it is, it goes. Whatever, whoever you are, you're the best. Someone will come along that's better. Whatever it is, you're the quickest. Then there'll be, after some time, a 9-year-old who's quicker.
Very annoying.
Yeah, especially now. Before it was at least, yeah. You know, you were 50 and then a 30 or 25-year-old came along. But now a six-year-old comes along and he's quicker than you.
Explains it to you.
Yeah. I remember seeing this kid. I think he was like, yeah, may have been like two and a half. And you're watching a cartoon on the phone, right? And then they have all these funny little things that poke in and this and that. He just sit there without even thinking. He just goes whoosh, like that and just keeps watching. And I'm going, what? What was that? I said, you can get rid of those things, you know?
Teach me.
Yeah, this is this little kid. He can't even really talk properly. You know? And it's not like he gets in there, you know how kids pick up things and they're clumsy and all that? Yeah. It was just like with this, just a flick of a finger. You know, because I tried it and it doesn't go away.
As they say now, the 50 is the new 30.
50 is
the new 30.
Yeah. Well, they used to say life begins at 40, then it was life begins at 50. Okay, so now we're going to say 50 is the new 30.
It depends when the pension starts, because it gets later. So you
yeah, that's true. If your pension would start at 30, then that's great, you know.
No, but they postpone the age because the pension starts later. So people have to be enthused.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I heard in France they moved it up from 65 to 67 or something. Probably because in the statistics more people die. And that so they don't have to pay out. It was a big riot in France when that came up. Okay, so it's because of the pension. Okay, so you can feel good. So if you're 50, that's the new 30. Then that way you could get yourself another 20 years before you're 50, and then the pension. Then you don't feel so bad. Wow. Okay. Social marketing, right?
Not to accept the Veda means that we have a problem with authority.
Yes, we have a problem with authority if we don't accept the Veda, because that's the first Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. We have to accept these, and if nothing else, the Shastra we accept. Like that one boy in London who then doubted Prabhupada's comments, and Prabhupada said he can doubt me. Okay, that may be, but how can he doubt the Shastra? So we have to be fixed in that point that the scripture is correct. Then if we don't understand, then that's due to our lack of qualification. But we never have doubt in the scripture. We never have doubt in the acharyas. We may not fully understand how they're saying or this. Like now, as we go through, words that we, you know, heard before, just took it as a regular word. Now we hear them, we find that they're much more different. Jai. I'm just saying, you're here. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so then, is that okay? We're good with that?
Yeah.
So if they accept that, then even if other things don't make sense, they can go ahead with their... The scriptures say, Prabhupada said, we chant, we follow the regular principles, we, you know, try to perform, you know, whatever we can work into our life, our situation. of the traditional practices, and then we move forward. Everything goes good. Right? Like that. Even if we don't fully understand, and then with time, as the heart gets purified, we'll, with spiritual intelligence, be able to understand. One could say, oh, but that's just, you know, blind faith. But then, isn't it blind faith that the whole idea of science, that they're actually going to know everything? You know, that they're going to find an origin, they're going to find life, when they've been saying this for how long? So how long is this blank check going to be given to us? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, it doesn't have, you know, because until you put the date on it, you can't cash the check. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's just going on and on. And that you'll enjoy, you'll live forever. Notice, I mean, I think it's a phenomenon now that the general lifespan's going down now. Before it was for a long time going up. You know, if you're 70s, 80s, like this, but now it's starting to go down. You know, just because of the pressures, the anxieties, and, you know, whatever is the concept. But we're not seeing what they're talking about. Economics, yes, that's going on. You know, people are making money off of it, but we're not seeing that the actual principles that they talk about are working. You know, does that make sense? So that's also just faith. So since it's a matter of faith, then you put it into the temporary or put it into the eternal. You know, and as Bhaktivinoda Kaur points out, okay, let's say there's God or there's no God. Okay? Now, if you believe in God and there's no God, there'll be no loss. Because you'll have been a good person. You know, people will agree with that, and that's always appreciated. Right? And if there is God, then, you know, you're sitting in the right side of the fence, right? You know, you're in the right company. And if there... So, but now if you don't believe in God, and there is a God, now you're in trouble. And if there's no God, okay, then yeah, but it's not that it would be any better than the guy that believes in God, but there isn't one. So of the two, there's no God, the person who believes in God will be actually socially better than the person who doesn't. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so it's just, you know, then why wouldn't you? It's just a better position if you look at it logically. The philosophy of Shakti Parinamavad declares that Brahman himself never becomes transformed. Rather, it is Brahman's inconceivable potency that becomes transformed. The Jiva Shakti becomes transformed into the individual spirit souls. And the Maya Shakti becomes transformed into the material world, right? So Shakti can transform, but the Lord doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. Brahman does not become transformed. Okay, if this version of Parinamavad is accepted, Brahman does not become transformed, right? Because Parinama means that there's transformation, yes?
When we say that Shaktis, they belong to God, it means that he created them, but he not out of himself? Because sometimes people...
They're non-different from himself, so they're not created.
So it means they're part of him.
Yes.
So when they change, it does not affect him. That's why he's not transformed. Can we say
that? Because the point is, what are we worried about in transformation? The material or the spiritual energies? We're here because of which ones? Yeah. So that's the ones that are important. Mm-hmm. Transformations of the spiritual energy we see doesn't create any material effect on the living entities, because mm-hmm. it's only, you have just the aspect of rasa being tasted. Mm-hmm. So then there's no problem there. So the thing we're worried about is the material. So we're affected by the transformation of the material, but Krishna's not. Mm-hmm. He's transcendental. Okay. But everything's Brahman, because it's all Krishna. But you have to understand that the Shakti Brahman can transform, and the Vishnu type of aspect doesn't. The act of transformation is defined in these words: Sa Tattvato Nyata Buddhir Dikara Iti Udaritaha. Transformation is when something appears to be what it is not. What is transformation? Transformation is when something appears to be different than what it is. Milk becomes transformed into yogurt. It is still milk in essence. It only appears to be something else. That is transformation, right? Because that means the Buddhist concept that by that transformation or whatever it is, what it comes from doesn't exist anymore, and then there's the new thing. Because to take it, you can't have the old thing still be there and get the new thing. You have to get rid of the old thing to have the new thing. So it seems to be a logical thing. But the point is then, if that piece of wood you're going to make the bowl out of disappears, how do you make the bowl? So all it is it transforms.
Yes.
That's the whole point. So they don't catch these things, so they play around. This point is a very, you know, in philosophy becomes very difficult because they can't understand the nature of God and his energies.
And all the philosophers, all the sixfold, they fall prey to this Asatkaryavad?
No, some accept Satkaryavad. Some don't like that. Means that you have the cause and effect, so they'll all, to some degree, it's just where they apply it. Some don't apply it at all, like we see the Buddhists. And I think Vaisheshika, something like that. But otherwise, it's a Vedic philosophy. So generally only those outside the Vedas don't accept it. But we have to remember, Mayavadis are only transformed Buddhists. Right? So they appear to be Mayavadis, but actually they're Buddhists. They're just Buddhists who are following use the Vedic scriptures as authority rather than the Buddhist scriptures. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. It only appears to be something else. Like clay, it transforms into a pot. It's still clay. It appears that it's something else, but it's not. It's still clay. That's transformation. So everything we see here is a transformation of the Pradhan. It appears to be something different, but it's not. It's still the same. According to the Brahma Parinamavad, right? Because Parinamavad means transformation. So Shakti Parinamavad means what we follow is that the energies transform. Brahma Parinamavad means that the Brahman is changing.
Mm-hmm. Whose philosophy is that?
Mayavadis. The individual, okay. According to Brahma Parinamabad, the individual spirit souls in the material world are both transformations of Brahman. So Brahman becomes transformed, then you have jivas, and then you have the material energy. But Brahman doesn't. Brahman is unchanging. This idea is not correct. Of this there is no doubt. The impersonal Brahman has no qualities. Therefore, as nothing that could be transformed into something else. Therefore, it cannot be said to be the origin of transformations, right? Because unchanging and eternal, these are the two material qualities of Brahman, even though they're transcendental points, that Krishna allows someone with material consciousness to understand. Even without bhakti, they won't understand. They can understand that much.
Which one?
That Brahman is unchanging and Brahman is, you know, eternal or all-pervading, like that kind of thing.
But if those are qualities, means? Impersonal Brahman has no qualities. We said he has
means that there's no material qualities, so you can't take something in. Because in the Brahma Parinamavad, then the jivas and the material energy technically don't exist. They're illusion. So how would Brahman have any qualities of illusion to be able to transform? Right, because transforming means, because we're saying it's Parinamavad, it's transformation. That means is that in the cause and effect, that means if there's illusion must be there in Brahman. And since everyone accepts there's no illusion in Brahman, that the philosophy won't work.
But if we take it differently, and saying that Brahman, they all accept those qualities, two qualities. And it is said in the Shastra that jivas are also all pervading. Means, based on this, we can say that this is the transformation of Brahman. Because his qualities come into the jiva.
But how do we say that about the material energy?
He's also all pervading. because it's everywhere.
It's everywhere by our perception. But the thing is we also know there's the destruction and all those things. So then how at that time it's all pervading. You know, in the context that we're seeing. You see, we're looking at it from one particular context. But the difficulty is as contexts change, the philosophy doesn't apply.
You know? Easier with our
philosophy. Yes. No, ours is just very straightforward. The Chintabheda Veda Tattva, though it's the subtlest, it actually accommodates everything. There's nothing that you can't discuss with it. All these others, they always have a problem. There's something that just doesn't quite make sense. Therefore, the Brahma Parinama Vada theory is not good. On the other hand, the Shakti Parinamavad does not have these defects. According to Shakti Parinamavad, Brahman is not transformed. Rather, it is Brahman's potency, which can do any impossible things. Right? So Brahman himself has no qualities, but he has his potency, which has all qualities. With that. Yeah, so that's the thing. Rather, it's Brahman's potency which can do any impossible thing. Right? That's the achintya aspect. Now, down here. That is transformed into the atomic individual souls and into the perverted reflection that is the material world. Jiva Dharma. Do we know what chapter?
Yes. Huh? I know the chapter.
But you should put here.
Even the chapter, no. Because I thought it's just a chapter. I did not put it.
No. We want to know the chapter.
Okay, do it.
How much is there? If there's verses, put the verses. If there's chapters, put the chapters. If there's anything that you can identify where it is,
okay,
it's always good to put.
Yes, we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives the most details, at least of all that we know. And Srila Prabhupada didn't get into that so much details because Bhaktivinoda Thakur already did that.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur already did that, but if we look at the you know, especially the modern mentality, it's all about this technical detail at the total expense of reality. Yeah, principle, reality, qualities, anything like that. So we might get into, like we were discussing yesterday, sometimes you have devotees, they can tell you all details about Radha Krishna and the pastimes and little things like this and that, but it's not necessarily that the principle of it's about remembering Krishna and pleasing Krishna doesn't necessarily is the prominent point. So technical detail, okay, no, you know, the all the realms, then Vrindavan's the highest of that, then the, what do you call it, the conjugal rasa is the highest of that, then Radharani and her group is the highest, like this. And so therefore, with the technical scientific thing and they, you know, the inherent, you know, material need for, position as prestige, and that especially enhanced by the Western mentality, then we have to know the best. And so because we know that, we're the best. But actually it's someone who remembers Krishna is the best. Not that I know these things. It is about Krishna. You're talking about Krishna. But what's the motive for talking about Krishna? You know what I'm saying? So then it's even though it's connected to Krishna, and it will give benefit, it's not actually the attitude we're looking for. Some sense. Because the attitude's wrong, then it affects the outcome. Right? Because the outcome is not just something observable, it's also experiential. Right? So, my knowledge and skills will affect the outcome. But my attitude will affect the experience. Does that make sense? So, the problem is if someone has a bad attitude, even though their knowledge and skills is, you know, let's say perfect, still it won't be a nice experience. Does that make sense? You know, it's like in these big companies. Corporate companies, bring in that professional middle manager. Really, really good. Does exactly what needs to be done. But no one likes the guy. right? Yeah. Because the attitude. Does that make sense? Because that's all it is that people appreciate expertise. Right? You know, it's very rare that they... you have a storyline that's on a guy who's absolutely useless. You know? Yeah. So, it's always someone who is good at what he does, or expert, even if he is useless, at some point in the storyline he has to become expert. You know, just because he blinked, or he sneezed, or something happened, you know, so then... You know? And so... The idea that someone is good at something, it's not a bad thing. So therefore, and that will be appreciated, but the most important is the attitude. Does that make sense? Because bottom line is experiential is what we call concrete. And what's not experiential, that's actually the abstract. In the modern presentation, it's the other way around. But in actuality, for us personally, how we govern our lives is by our experiences, not by the facts. Does that make sense? So then, we should be engaged in the developing the ability to experience the transcendental. And since transcendental is perfect, means the attitude is perfect. That's why there's so much talk about the devotee being humble, being tolerant. You know, is that you know, that kind of thing. Okay, good. Sri Govinda Bhashya, Siddhanta, the word tu indicates refutation of the doubt. I tadat myam idam sarvam. Everything is one with him. Whatever transformations exist, yavad vikaram, all the varieties, vibhagaha, are in him. Pradhan Mahatattva and all other transformation and their divisions described in Subala and other Shrutis are indicated by this statement to be one with him. An example is given. If a person, after saying, all these are Chaitra's sons, glorifies one of those sons as being born of Chaitra, it is understood that all of them are born of Chaitra. Thus, Upanishad says, everything is one with Brahman, right? Then it may get into dealing with one aspect, another, and glorifying here or there, yeah? After it is stated that Pradhan, Mahatattva, etc. arose from Brahman, in describing how fire, water, and food arose from Brahman, it should be understood that all the elements arose from Brahman, right? So they shouldn't just take it, well, they only mentioned fire, water, and food. It's because those ones are involved in the whole process, because we from food then comes the living the body of the living entity, so he can function, right? You know, because so that's the whole thing. Because in here, food doesn't come from nothing; it comes from earth, unless you're into hydroponics and all that. But then, what do you need fire for? You know, unless afterwards, then you're cooking what you grew in the water. But you know, like the fish; they just eat sushi. Right? Fish only eat sushi. Well, they don't cook anything, do they? They just eat the fish raw. That's sushi. Raw fish. You want to throw some rice in or this or that, you can do. But
it's not a nice perspective.
No, it's not. That's the fun part about the material world. There's always, you can always say it in a way that it's somehow or another. That's not very inspiring, because you say it's the attitude, right? Mm. Like that.
And who is the whole experience? And what is that?
Be happy if you don't know. you know the sea, the ocean? Mm. You have spinach that grows in the sea. Okay. It's called seaweed. You know the stuff that grabs around your foot that you think is a monster, is going to kill you? That stuff. You take it out of the water and dry it. Now, guaranteed it smells like fish. But it's not fish. But it's been hanging out with fish for a long time. Right?
That's really a ruining experience. Huh? That's really ruining.
Yeah.
Then you take some rice, ideally some really sticky, gooky rice. If it's nice basmati, don't use that. It has to be something sticky and gummy.
Sushi rice.
Yeah, or brown rice, anything like that. Then you take that and you put it in here and roll it up and then you eat it. So, now you're happy you don't know? Then you add soy sauce, you know, like this kind of.
Avocados inside, cucumber, cheese.
Yeah, but then you could just eat those on the... They're making that nice, right? Because explaining that, you're going, that's not so nice. And these things make it nice. Why not just eat those without the...
No, it's different.
So in other words, if you have more of a closeness in your, you know, how you say, lifetimes of having been a Bengali, then you're going to really like the sushi. But if it's been a long time since, then the sushi won't be so great.
Sushi is a Bengali dish?
No, Bengali's like fish.
Okay.
So if you're not into fish, you won't like sushi.
Nobody's into fish, because all are Bengalis.
Not the fish, but maybe the flavors. But a close also is like brewer's yeast, that also kind of gives the same kind of thing.
Prabhupada said about
urandam. Yeah, it's very strong. That's the sattvic form. Like that. You know, just like neem, that's the sattvic form of onions. You ever taken the neem and soaked it in water? You know, for getting the water for putting on tulsi? After it sits a couple of days, it smells like onions.
Yeah, we experienced that.
Yeah, it smells like onions. Like that. So that's the sattvic form. You know, you're getting the medicinal benefits of the onions. So, I say, enough of this mundane distraction here. Thus the Upanishad says everything is one with Brahman. After it is stated that Pradhan, Mahatattva, etc. arose from Brahman, in describing how fire, water, and food arose from Brahman, it should be understood that all the elements arose from Brahman, right? That they didn't mention every one of the 24 doesn't mean that they didn't arise. It's understood. They all, because the Shastra said, these are all from, expanding from Pradhan, which is coming from the Lord, and so therefore if it only mentions the ones that are necessary for defining the principles of yajna, right? How someone performs yajna, by that then they go to the heavenly planets, after that they come down, they're born as grains, that becomes food, that becomes then semen, that becomes a new body, and this way then they grow up, then they do the yajna, they go back to the heavenly planets. So that cycle of karma, then we know that since that's what someone's absorbed in, then it's being explained here, just the essential points. You don't have to get into all detail. Thus, though the Upanishad does not specifically mention ether arising from Brahman, that arising of ether is understood implicitly. That is the meaning of Vibhaga in the sutra. All divisions are included, even if not mentioned specifically. Right? Does that make sense? So you're saying all the elements, they're also all there. But, so, how do you say? Now, just as we're, how do you say? Just analytically looking at sushi, and it loses some of its, how you say, romantic charm.
Or you love to look.
No, but but the principle is that that's how the analytical philosophy works. You take that which is you're attached to and analyze it in that way, it becomes less interesting. So whatever the attachment is like that, if it's seen in context of the philosophy, analytically, that reduces the interest. That doesn't mean that it won't come back again. It just means that it's already started the process. If that's done regularly, so someone on the platform of Jnana Yoga, that's just what they do all the time, or a major part of the time. Or someone who's more on Karma Yoga, they'll do that sometimes.
psychologically, what's more beneficial, if the person does it himself or he hears from others, or both?
Generally, both. You hear it means, why will you do yourself unless you've heard? Then you've heard, you contemplate, that's then how it'll apply. So you have to do both. That's why it always starts from Guru Sadhana and Shastra. And then it's gone. So you can take anything and do that to it. You know? That's the whole point, is that the mind puts together that something is very, very nice. But it'll all be the whole thing. Like that. You understand? Let us say, okay, you have that kind of that long bar and all the seats behind it, and then you have a little conveyor belt moving just in front, and going down all that is going all the sushi, and you're sitting there with your bowl and your chopsticks. Mm. Right? It all works. Mm. No? Or you still haven't been to one of those?
No.
Oh, okay. It's on the bucket list, right?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Now let's say we just take that same preparation, take it out on the, you know, on the street, you know, Calcutta, one of those street side vendors and all that, and the little leaf cup and this and all the bustle of people, it doesn't quite have the same draw. You understand? So there's a lot of it that goes with it. And so we put that all together, that will give us the experience. Because we're looking for an experience. So it's not just the taste or this or that. It's also whatever is connected with it. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like, what do you call it? If you're eating Oriental food, you eat it with chopsticks. Right? You could eat it with a fork, but you eat it with chopsticks. You know? If you're taking Italian food, you eat it with a fork. But you could eat it with chopsticks, seeing that the noodles did come from China. Right? And at the same time, it's before Henry VIII, they used to eat their pasta with their fingers. Right? You know, but you have that, no, Indian, you eat with your fingers, this, you eat with that, I eat this, it just goes with it.
Some devotee coming with his own chopsticks, or for sushi, etc.
Well, yeah, well, that's if you're more serious. Like, you don't want to end up in the next sushi, so you use your own chopsticks. Like that. Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. Yes.
Raj, we know that Bhagavan, he has energies and he has qualities. And sometimes we mix them together. So,
well, they're the same.
Same.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem if we mix them.
No. Because the point is, you see qualities, it's just like, because he has that, he's all-pervading, then qualities will be all-pervading, energies, all these different aspects, they all go together. So there's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Because his energies have qualities. Because that's what's transforming and all that, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because from Yoga Maya to Mahamaya, you're transforming the quality. Same principle, but it's just, you know, in essence, it's the same. You know, it's just like samvit sandini ladini becomes goodness, passion, and ignorance. But it's transformed, it's different, it acts different. So milk acts in one way, yogurt acts in another. But it's still in essence milk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was always thinking is that energies are transforming, but qualities remain the same. It's like stable position, more or less.
But it's just like, well, the energy is also, it's just like internal potency is always steady as internal potency. You know, samvit's always samvit, sandini, ladini, sladini. So it's just a matter of what you're looking at. And even these positions to transform, that those positions are things that can be done, those are also always there. They're also eternal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, that the internal potency then can transfer as the external potency, that principle is always there. You're saying, so all these things, that's the whole, the beauty of the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. The simultaneous, that connection between everything, because it's all connected to Krishna, at the same time, the unique differences that are there that give rise to the Lord's pastimes and rasa. that?
Yeah. So, say for example, Sat Chit and Ananda, those are his qualities.
Yeah.
Is it? But then he's got energies. It's a different set of things.
But Sat Chit and Ananda are also the Sandini Sambit Ladini, the Ishakriya Jnana. So they're all. That's the whole point, is that one has to see that the analytical path being taken is going to get a particular result, you know, which is going to include remembering Krishna. So if we get too much into those kind of things, then the difficulty comes down is that if the acharyas don't really bring that up, it's not necessarily as important for our development. I mean, it's not that you can't analyze it, it's just that what specific benefit will you get? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then we have to see is that we're trying to separate Krishna and his qualities and his energies and the energies and the qualities and all these too much, then we're overemphasizing the difference.
Yeah.
You know, and so just like exclusive monism is a problem, so exclusive Dvaitism is a problem also. So like you see, even Madhvacharya, when even though when it comes to within the material world, he's strictly just Dvait. But you see when he talks about the relationships in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha, then he doesn't use Dvait anymore. You know, it has this natural form of relationship there. So he'll start sounding more like Ramanuja.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or Vishnu Swami, like this. Because the Vaishnava understanding is the same in the spiritual world. Right? It's just what taste is there, so how far they take it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Vishishtavait, Vishuddha Dvait, and Dvait, those will go very well in Vaikuntha. Right? The and then the Dvait Advait will work very nicely in, you know, Dwarka and those places. And it's not that the others also can't function there, it's just they're not as strong. Because you have that mood where they keep shifting back and forth between that aspect of sweetness and their relationship with Krishna as, you know, a family or friend or that, and then Krishna's greatness and he's the Supreme Lord, and then switching into the servitor mood. Right? So Dvait Advait will work very nicely there, because it'd be this or it could be that. The oneness is there, so then Vasudev sees he's the father of Krishna. But then when the Dvait aspect, he's God, then there's a difference, so then you see yourself as servant.
Yeah.
So the whole point of the Dvait is to bring about the mood of servant, rather than you're the Supreme Lord. Right? But Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, that's what's going to work in Vrindavan, in Braj, because he can be God, but that doesn't affect your relationship with him. So Mother Jashoda can understand he's God, but at the same time just still carry on as his mother. Because simultaneously the two can function. Well, if you don't have that, then it, like we see in Dwarka, it splits. And Krishna has to extend the Yoga Maya again to make it function. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Did we answer the question?
Yes.
Okay. Just not sure we didn't get into too much of a tangent or something. Like with the sushi or something.
A lot of tension.
Hmm?
A lot of tension with
the sushi. Okay. If one argues Vedanta Sutra 3.3, no, 233. Gaunya sambhavach chabdach cha. That origin of ether is figurative, since ether cannot be created. It is also said that the Lord has inconceivable powers for creating everything. Though there are statements in scripture saying that ether is eternal, those statements are figurative, right? It's the opposite of what they're doing. They're trying to take the creation part is figurative, and it's eternal. Well, then the Acharya is saying, no, it's the eternal part that's figurative. Right? And it is created. Since scripture also says that ether is subject to creation and destruction, we can determine that ether has an origin and destruction from inference also. Ether is created because it is an element, and elements like fire have the quality of being created and destroyed. This is the positive argument. The negative argument is ether is not like the Atma and therefore cannot be eternal. Right? It's part of the material thing, so it's going to change. The object raised in Vedanta Sutra 234, Syach Chaikasya Brahma Shabdavat, that a word can have two meanings in one sentence, is also refuted by this sutra. Thus accepting the origin of ether is not a new concoction, but instead is authoritative. Footnote 10. Srila Jiva Goswami, referencing the current sutra, refutes the opponent's claim that jiva has an origin. If jiva is different from Brahman, is he a transformation arising from Brahman, like the elements? It is said, Yavad vikaram tu vibhago lokavat. Since all transformations come from Brahman, any object not specifically mentioned must also come from Brahman, just as in ordinary life. Brahma Sutra 236. It is not so, because jiva's nature is different from matter. According to other scriptural statements, its difference is established without consideration of size or amount. Atma is accomplished by its behavior, before things take shelter of transformation of amount and size, etc. Thus, Atma is not included in the items which transform from Brahman, Vibhaga, right? So that means only the material creation is transforming. The jiva is not transforming. Right? There are also shrutis to show that the Atma is eternal and not created, just as the scriptures state that the objects of Vaikuntha are eternal. Paramatma Sandarbha. Do we know verses and stuff?
It's Sarva Samvadini.
Oh, okay, so if that's all that he said, then that's fine.
Yes.
Okay. Does that make sense? So in other words, the material elements are transforming from Brahman, from the Brahman Shakti, but not the jivas. Okay. Does that make sense? Like that. So the jiva is eternal, like Brahman's eternal. Pradhan's also eternal, but its transformation is the 24 elements and all these things that we see happens, and then it's created and destroyed, created and destroyed. Right?
Yeah. Maharaj, material energy transforms, and internal energy also transforms. That is not important. However, tatastha shakti, does it also transform?
Tatastha shakti means the shakti itself transforms as the jivas.
Okay.
But the jivas aren't transforming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference. Because he said that just before.
When we say jiva is not transforming, because in our mind transformation means change. So it means that the material body is changing.
Yes, but the jiva never does.
The same.
Yeah, it's just that they due to this idea that I can enjoy separately from Krishna, then the jiva identifies with that principle, and therefore they're given the material energy to function in. And since the jiva is a person, then getting a body with senses to therefore apply that concept is you know, most natural. So they'll identify with that material body, even though they're not. The body will be transforming, but the soul doesn't. Soul's the same. So, on that principle that eternal Satchitananda, you know, how small this, all souls are the same. So in that way it says all souls are the same. But they're individuals, and so they have their unique personality and all that.
So when we say that the jiva doesn't transform, we basically mean that the characteristics of the jiva are unchanged.
The characteristics and the individual living entity is unchanged. The individual jiva doesn't change.
Okay.
Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.48. I am the reservoir of unlimited potency, and therefore I am known as unlimited or all-pervading. From my material energy, the cosmic manifestation appeared within me. And in this universal manifestation appeared the chief being, Lord Brahma, who is your source and is not born of a material mother. Right, so he's the reservoir of all these potencies. Everything is coming from there. Right? Okay, Adhikarana 2. So the idea is that now the philosophy of that air means it's establishing that air is created, because some will say just like ether, it's not created. They'll try to say air is not created. Mata Rishvadikaranam. Sutra reference 237. Adhikarana Prakashita. Here in this Adhikarana, the Vaisheshikas claim air to be eternal. But the other was that the
this is all Vaisheshik.
The previous one though was Shankya.
No, Vaisheshik. I don't have it.
Okay.
Because
the Sutrakar proves that the eternality of air is only in comparison to other things. Indeed, air also has its source, and the source is ether. This means air is not eternal. Right? I mean, as far as we're concerned, you know, the air is there, and then we'll be here, and then when we go away, the air will still be there. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Summary of Adhikarana 2. So the point is being made, the Vishaya, air is also created. The doubt, is air also created or is it eternal? And then their argument, because it was never described in the Chandogya Upanishad, it is clear that air was never created. So before it said fire, water, and food. So it didn't mention air, but then also that means earth. So earth, air, ether weren't mentioned. So in their mind, then, therefore, they're eternal. Right? You know, it's just like at work, they didn't mention you getting paid. So that means now that's eternal. Right? You know, you'll eternally get paid? No. It means you won't get paid. Right? Siddhanta, the Sutrakar gives the following explanation to show that the arguments of the previous Adhikarana also apply to the creation of air. Right, just as it was already explained in the previous, now it's being discussed here. Same point. Sutra 237. Etena Matarishva Vyakyata. Etena, by this, Matarishva, air, Vyakyata, is explained. By this explanation, it is also explained that air has an origin. That is by the previous one. Right? Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar systematically proves that the essence of air
existence.
Is within ether.
Existence.
Hmm? Oh, existence. Yeah. Hence, if ether is created by Brahman, as proved in the previous Adhikarana, leads us to a natural understanding that air is also created, and thus air is not eternal. Right, so if the ether is created by Brahman and air expands from ether, that means then air also is not eternal. Okay. Siddhanta. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. This proof that ether was created clearly shows that air, which exists within ether, must also have been created. This is so because the limbs of something must have the same qualities as the whole of which they are parts. The Taittiriya Upanishad explains that air was created from ether. Purvapaksha, so the doubt comes up. It means their, you know, argument. That description of the creation of air must have been a figure of speech, because the Shruti Shastra explains that air is eternal. Uttara. The Chandogya Upanishad affirms in a Pratigya statement, Aitad Atmyam Idam Sarvam, that everything was created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, the creation of air is proved. When it is said that air is eternal, the intention is that it is only so relative to some other things. Right? You know, like the demigods, you know, that they are deathless when, you know, it doesn't work out that way. It's just in comparison to us. The present sutra is separated from the previous sutra to ensure that Vedanta Sutra 239 Tejo Tas Tata Hyata concerning fire would refer only to air and not to air and ether. Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference. Right, you want to make sure that you see all the connections with that. So we don't want to show is the fired air, but it's how you say? Yeah, when you come up with fire, then it means you're referring to air, not ether. And then air, you're referring to ether.
Yes.
Right? So, because it goes back in that way.
Yes.
Because otherwise they might take the fire is there, but it doesn't connect to air. Mm. You know? But air connects to ether. Mm. And so therefore then it's separate, so that you know that it connects.
Yes.
And so therefore just as what applied to ether then applies to air.
Yeah.
Bhagavatam verse reference. 3.2.6.35. From ethereal existence, which evolves from sound, the next transformation takes place under the impulse of time, and thus the subtle element touch, and hence the air and sense of touch become prominent. The Sutrakar indicates that the sole theme of discussion throughout Pada 3 has been the origin of Bhuta and Jiva, hence the origin of Brahman, is being discussed in the next Adhikarana to bring about a continuation, completeness, and correct conclusion to the topic itself. Right? Because you're saying it's all coming from Brahman, but then they might bring up that, well, Brahman's not eternal. Right? Just in case. Because you see, to win an argument, then they'll do anything. That's the whole problem. Adhikarana 3. Brahman has no origin. Asambhava Adhikaranam. Sutra reference 2.3.8. Adhikarana Prakashika. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakar emphasizes that Brahman is without cause and is the cause of all causes. It was as well previously established in Vedanta Sutra 1.4.14. Kananatvena chakashadishu yata vyapadishtoktehe. That the Lord is without cause and yet he is the cause for other gross and subtle manifestations. Additionally, the opening sutra, Vedanta Sutra 112, Janmadyasya Yataha, confirms that the Lord is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the worlds. Hence, he has no cause. Not accepting this would directly defy the Shrutis. Summary of Adhikarana 3. So then the point being made, the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1 affirms, Sadeva Samyedam, O Gentle One, in the beginning Sat alone existed. Right? So Brahman alone existed. Then the doubt, is Sat or Brahman also produced or not? And then their argument, since causes like Pradhan and Mahatattva are produced, Brahman is also produced since it is also a cause like others. Right? Now they're dropping the whole thing about the air and all these being eternal now that, you know, because now you've shown they're not, now they're going to go after this. Siddhanta, the Sutrakar addresses the doubt as follows. Sutra 2.3.8. Asambhavastu sato nu papattehe. Asambhavaha, the state of not being created, to, indeed, sataha, of the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, anu papattehe, because of impossibility. Brahman has no origin because it is not befitting its definition. Right? He's always defined as eternal. Sutta Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the opponent's argument that Brahman has a cause by quoting Shastra that described the Lord as having no cause. He is accepted as the root cause without which would give rise to infinite regression and thereby conflict the Shrutis. Like the Shruti says he has no cause. So if you're trying to say, no, but everything else has a cause, so therefore he must have a cause, then you're contradicting the Shrutis. And then you get no result of that logic. You just keep going back. You can do that eternally. And so to avoid that, then they'll drop the topic rather than accept the topic. But the point is no, what's spiritual comes from beyond. We're discussing the material world. We don't know the spiritual. Why are you discussing that? The material, everything has an origin. And that's coming from the Supreme. And that's all that's necessary to know to function in the material world or to function to get out of the material world. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not a necessary point. It's just one of those, if you're going to mess with our philosophy, we're going to mess with yours. That's all. It's just, it comes down to that. Sri Govinda Bhasya, Siddhanta, the word tu indicates a refutation of the doubt or it is used for emphasis. There is no origin, asambhavaha, of Brahman, sataha. Why? Because it is unsuitable, anupapattehe, for that which is without cause. Thus the Shruti says, sakaranam karanadi padipo, nachasya kaschit janita na chapi chadipaha. Brahman is the cause, the Lord of the Lord of causes, the Lord of the Lords of causes. He has no cause or ruler over him. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6:9. One cannot infer that Brahman has an origin because it is a cause, and every cause must have another cause, since this is contradicted by Shruti and reasoning. Brahman is accepted as the root cause, final cause, and without any other root cause, because otherwise causes would go on in an infinite regression. That which is the root cause has no cause, since the root cannot have another root. By refuting that Brahman has a cause, it is also understood that Brahman alone is without cause or origin, since it is the ultimate cause, and everything like avyakta and mahatattva arises from Brahman alone. The origin of ether and air are used as examples of this. So they all go back to Brahman. Yes. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.